This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse.
We left Ruby and Edie settling in at Frank's place, with Ruby wondering how they'll fit in with the volume of Frank's late mother's belongings.
Aside from the parcel of meat, there wasn't much in the Frigidaire. Tea was going to be a slap-up affair of whatever she could find, with hard-boiled eggs. Frank took Edie off to play chess in the dining room, while Douglas set the fire and Ruby delved into the fridge and examined the larder. The bread bin had most of a loaf in it, and the larder shelves were full of preserved fruit, jams and different sorts of pickles and chutneys, each labelled and dated in small, neat handwriting. 5-pint jars of salted sliced green beans were dated Feb 1952. Mrs. Pierce didn't get to harvest last summer's beans. Frank must have ordered in tins of soup and vegetables. Ruby shook a jar of barley, looking for signs of weevils.
"Fire's going," said Douglas at her shoulder.
Ruby held up a dusty tin of tohiroa soup. He screwed up his nose. "We haven't talked about whether you can give us a lift in the mornings, or how it will fit in with you," she said, tipping the cooked carrots into a colander. Douglas put 4 plates on the kitchen table.
"Don't worry about that for now," he said. "I've told HQ I'm in town and doing some of the nearby villages for the next few weeks. I'll think of something."
We'll think of something," Ruby said, as she sprinkled white pepper into the sauce. "Next week I'll have to get Edie to school before work."
"Something can be arranged."
Ruby chewed her lip, thinking about hurrying Edie to school on cold, rainy mornings and racing to Vado. "There'll be a bus, surely."
"Leave it with me,"
Douglas said, as though picking up her thoughts. The sauce was on the verge of being too thick. She grated in some cheddar to rescue it.
"You're a miracle," Douglas said. "He loves cheese sauce. He won't believe I didn't tell you. I'll peel the eggs, shall I?"
"By the way," she said, "did you talk to Frank?"
"About?"
Ruby rolled her eyes and tapped the third finger of her left hand.
"Oh, that," Douglas said. I dare say he's mulling it over. It just doesn't pay to be impatient when Frank's concerned. Let's see how things work out."
"I'm not going out of my way to make a good impression," she said quietly. "That wouldn't be fair."
"No, it wouldn't," said Frank,
coming up to the bench without his stick and grabbing a piece of hot carrot from the colander.
"Unless you're an actress, and a good one who's performing a part, you're not likely to give me any sort of impression, good or bad. Are you an actress, Ruby?"
She was stung, wordless, barely holding back an impulse to slap him.
"If you're not acting," he added, "and something tells me you aren't, then my impression is my own, whatever you do. Anyhow, I might have already formed an impression."
There were the creases of a smile at the corners of his eyes, and there might have been a brief twinkle, shadowed by the black lashes. Ruby had put Vi in her place. Now Frank was assuring her just whose place this was,
It was all about territory. She returned his smile, her lips compressed, and nodded. Whether they were ever likely to reach the stage of friendship remained to be seen. For now, they had an accord. Ruby stretched. In a haze of contentment, she even welcomed the sound of Sunday's church bells in the distance. Across the room, Edie's arms and legs splayed akimbo in sleep, her face rosy with warmth. It would be cruel to wake her from the luxury of it. Frank sat in the kitchen reading a folded page of last night's Evening Standard. The crossword had been done, and the comic strip page was under his tea things.
"That pot's cold." He lifted the teapot. "I'll have another if you're making it."
"Good morning," she said.
"You're a marvel," said Frank, as she filled the kettle. "I had a nosy at the butcher's parcel in the fridge. Don't tell me you're treating us to a Sunday roast."
"I hope mutton's all right," said Ruby. "It's only a four-quarter. It was all the butcher had by the time I got there."
"Best part," said Frank. "But I'd eat the backside of a goat. I haven't had a roast for months."
"Where's Douglas?"
"Gone back to that damn boarding house," said Frank. "He'll be here soon, I expect. We usually spend Sundays together."
"Frank, if I give you a list, would you ring the grocer and the butcher tomorrow? I hope they deliver early in the week."
"Should be all right. I'll tell them to."
Frank looked up from his paper.
"Put it by the phone. And we're having apple crumble again, aren't we?"
"If you like. Wouldn't you like peaches?"
"Do you know why there's a shelf full of jars of them? 'Cause I'd rather have my peaches straight off the tree. You have them if you like."
"Apple crumble, then."
"Dougie will be pleased."
The arrival of Douglas was heralded by Edie's excited holler. "Uncle Douglas is here!"
"What's new in the world, Dougie?"
Frank said, once Douglas had extracted himself from Edie's arms.
"Put the kettle on, Ruby. Light me a cigarette, old man, will you?"
Ruby left them to it. In their room, she shuffled around the contents in the chest of drawers and managed to clear two drawers for the underwear. In front of the open wardrobe, she ran her hands over the textures of garments and pulled out a lady's cherry-coloured winter jacket. The woolen material was quality, and the garment was large. Mrs. Pierce had been a competent dressmaker. By the feel of the lining, Ruby sensed it had not been worn. With the seams taken apart and clever designing, there'd be enough length to make Edie a new coat that should fit for the rest of the year at least. Removing a bulky mohair overcoat left room for Edie's old coat next to the cherry-coloured jacket. She held the overcoat up. The fabric was good, other than holes where moths or silverfish had ruined the cuffs. It looked pre-war, missing its collar and buttons, and far too large for Mrs. Pierce's mannequin. Had Mrs. Pierce picked it up at a jumble sale because of the quality of the material? Ruby tried it on. It was so expansive she could wrap it around herself twice, and it nearly reached her feet. Edie appeared in the doorway, laughing behind her hand.
"That looks so silly."
"I like this shade of green. And it's warm," said Ruby. "If Frank says I can have it, I might cut it up and make myself a warm coat." Edie stroked the texture of the fabric.
"But not if it's his old mother's who died, though, eh?"
"Probably not. I don't think it was hers. And don't say A."
"There you are, Tink," said Frank when he saw them. "Douglas here says he's going to make scones for Elevenses. He might need some supervision."
"What sort of scones?"
"Plain ones," said Douglas.
"Date," said Frank. "Have we got any dates, Ruby? You've been through everything."
"No dates. I'll put it on the list. You can have currants or raisins."
"Currants,"
said Edie.
"Currants it is," said Frank.
We've got plenty of suet, I hope, Douglas said.
I saw a box in the fridge, and there's butter, she said.
You didn't say you can cook, Douglas.
A batch of scones is about the extent of it, I'm afraid, said Douglas.
He's being far too modest, said Frank. I've had some very passable tins heated up by this man.
Frank, Ruby said, once Douglas and Edie were busy. The wardrobe in our room.
Of course, biff the lot out.
He waved his cane.
Give it to Vi for the jumble. Or put it on the rubbish. There's an incinerator down the back. You'll need room for your own things.
No, no. I was just wondering if I could...
Oh, if there's anything you can use, help yourself and chuck the rest. I keep meaning to go through it all.
Thanks. There are a few things I might like to use.
Go for your life. Say, why don't I come up with you and we'll have a look through it all?
He got to his feet.
I haven't a clue what's there. Mother used to make our costumes, you know. There'll be stuff poked in all kinds of nooks and crannies throughout the house. Might be a chance for a clean-out.
It was strange. She'd moved in with hardly anything, only to find a cache of so much stuff. Some of it might have to be thrown out just to make room for her. She nearly laughed.
Tell you what, I heard you sew, Frank enthused. Come with me. You spotted the sewing machine, I take it?
Yes. You won't mind.
Mother would be glad it's all coming to some use. She'd let you have the lot if she was here to have a say. She was like that. And she can't use it now, so you're welcome to anything you want. First, let me show you this. This might interest you.
Frank led her to the smallest spare room, lifted the blind, and pulled open the ornately carved doors of an old wardrobe lined with shelves of folded fabric.
Mother's armoire, he said with a flourish. Look at all that. All kinds of tat and gaudy stuff if you want to make a fancy costume for Tink. I say, there's some Stuart.
He unfurled the short length.
Should be enough here to make a very nice skirt for Tinkerbell. Oh, and see this. This is lovely.
He flapped out a length of blue-grey crepe and held it near her face. Ruby pulled her head back.
I know, it all pongs a bit. Camphor. She believed in mothballs, my mother. You'll have to air everything, but this matches your eyes. Very flattering. A blouse, of course.
He pointed to a chest of drawers.
Mother'll have buttons for everything over there. Pearl buttons for the crepe, I suppose. Though maybe a modern young thing like you might want something a bit more interesting. Black, perhaps. Yes, large black buttons. To give it an accent. I'm sure there's enough there to get long sleeves out of it. Perfect for winter.
A modern young thing indeed. What a quaint thing to say. It must be one of his good days when the pain hardly hampered him. Frank delved happily into drawers and a wooden cabin trunk, his face glowing.
Almost everything you need is here.
She held a large piece of suiting against her waist and let it drop. I'd like to make a pair of slacks for myself out of this.
Slacks? How very Greta Garbo. I wouldn't cut into that for pants, though, he said. There's enough there to make a very nice costume. One of those straight skirts and a chic little jacket, he grinned. Douglas brings home the occasional luscious magazine and keeps me up to date. If you want pants, that charcoal colour would do very nicely.
There was a wealth of fabric for every season and occasion. Prints and plains, some of it fine quality. By the thickness and weight of each neatly folded piece, she guessed they varied in length. Somewhere there'd be a collection of offcuts. The late Mrs. Pierce was clearly loath to throw anything away. Fancy having a whole house to keep things in.
Ruby, I have to ask,
Frank's voice was suddenly sober.
Hmm?
She lifted up a piece of polished cotton, printed with lilacs.
Ruby, Frank said, a little louder. Tell me. You're not out to make a pair of chumps of us, are you?
She shoved the cloth into the armoire and pushed the doors shut. This was the second time he'd stung her. It was a fair question, though. She leaned her forehead against the carved door. Is that what he thought? Had she really lost all decency and reduced herself to having the base instincts of a stray cat, ready to snatch at anything to take care of her young? She straightened up, squaring her shoulders, turned and stepped forward, meeting his inquisitorial stare with mixed dread and relief. I haven't meant to. Without saying it, she invited him to look into her and discover everything she wanted to hide, have it flicker across the silver of her eyes, like pictures in a magic lantern, so he'd never have to ask, and she'd never have to put words to it. I didn't think so, she said. I don't know. Is that what I've done?
You're all right, kid.
With that, he kissed her cheek. A faint punctuation mark, closing the subject. At the school gates on Monday morning, Douglas opened the car door like a chauffeur and waited for Edie and Ruby to get out. Don't leave your lunch on the back seat, Ruby said. Edie grabbed the paper bag of sandwiches.
I don't want my lunch.
Bye, kiddo, said Douglas.
Edie ignored him.
No one else has their lunch in a rotten paper bag.
Ruby bent toward Edie's ear. Cut that out, or we won't go shopping after school.
Shopping? I nearly forgot,
Edie squealed.
Will you buy me a wee case, like that girl's?
We'll see. And don't point at people, it's rude.
Have a good day, Douglas said. Learn something new.
Ta-ta, Ruby said, but Edie had already flitted away. In the car, he turned to Ruby.
Would you allow me to...
He reached into the breast pocket of his jacket. She knew what the movement meant. No, she almost shouted. No, don't. How dare he think of offering her money? He withdrew his hand.
I just thought a couple of pounds might...
Thanks, but no.
All right. But if you ever need...
I won't. Thank you, though. They didn't speak as he drove. She should have walked. It was only a few blocks. Pink camellias were beginning to spot the glossy-leafed shrubs, and it was neither raining nor windy for a change.
Outside the library at 4:30,
Douglas said as they pulled up in the lane behind Vardo. Would outside Mackenzie's at 5 be all right?
5, then.
He gave her a brief, sad smile. Had she hurt him? It must have been afternoon tea time when the blocking room door opened and Janice poked her head out. It's nearly 3 o'clock, hun. Ruby had been halfway through a line of stitches. She threw the cover over the tray, raced down the stairs without much care, ripping off her smock as she went. All last week she'd made it to the school before the children were released. Now, as she ran, she passed herds of children already walking down the street. Tomorrow she'd tell Edie to meet her on the porch at the back of Salon Vardo. There'd be time for her to dawdle with her friends, as any child should. After all, she was safe here, wasn't she? Edie waved to her classmates. Ruby took her hand and caressed the fine bones with her thumb as they walked to the square. There wasn't much money left in Ruby's pay packet after buying Frank's mutton roast on Friday. Some of Angel's sock money was still in her purse. How much would one of those little cases cost? The one Edie pointed out was probably pressed cardboard with a leather-look grain, an imitation of an imitation. But if it was fashionable for little girls... I should buy you a proper school bag strong enough for books, said Ruby, doubting she could afford one.
I'd like a little case. Everyone's got one.
Who's everyone? If everyone else jumped off a bridge, you'd want to too, I suppose. I'd like to see what those girls carry in those silly little cases. I'll bet there's nothing more than a sandwich and a pencil. Edie scuffed her feet. Was there any point telling her a case like that wouldn't last? But her girl deserved something special. Come on, then, she said. Ruby had done her sums. If the case was cheap enough, there might be some money left to buy her another pair of socks and a woolen singlet.
Mum! Edie yanked her sleeve. I was talking to you and you weren't listening.
Shh! We're crossing the road, Ruby said. Quick! They avoided Main Street, with the steam and coal smut from the train blowing low across the road, the cyclists and traffic careering through it all. At the square, Ruby glanced at the people they passed, clerks and secretaries going home from work, people getting to the shops before they closed, men on their way to one of the pubs, mothers racing for buses, towing their children to get home in time to put tea on before the men folk got back. Ruby felt them flood past her. Her breath seized in her chest, and her feet refused to move. She grabbed Edie by the collar, pulling her to a standstill.
Mum!
Edie protested as she was held fast. Ruby couldn't shift her eyes from a figure up ahead. That familiar, loose, bent-kneed swagger. That cock-o'-the-walk strut. The sloped shoulders. The hat on the back of the head. The alert turning of his face this way and that, as though he was looking out for prey. It had to be a mistake. What would that rotten specimen be doing in Palmerston North, of all places?
Mum, what are we stopping for?
Edie gave her a quizzical look. Ruby couldn't speak. Her hands clasped her daughter's shoulders, and she pulled her in against her coat. Edie's protests were muffled.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.